David Crabb had the chance to visit Eldoret 3 times and serve as attending physician on the medicine wards 2 times. Those experiences were important in directing his main interests toward care of vulnerable patients and taking his current position as Chief Medical Officer for Eskenazi Health. He will tell his story titled Bedside Teaching and Learning.
Thank you. I hope you like the tie. I got it the last time I was there in exchange for a pen light from one of the interns. The chance to be an attending physician on the wards in Kenya really rekindled for me a love of clinical medicine and bedside teaching. And so I thought I would talk about a woman that I remember frequently and talk about frequently because of what she taught me. She is what we would kind of call an interesting case, which is something you don't want to be. You don't want to have a disease or a process that others want to come in and see because it's uncommon. She had HIV. She was in her 20s, I think. She had tuberculosis, and she had a kind of tuberculosis that goes to the brain. So it's in the fluid around the brain. It's called tuberculous meningitis. It's a very bad thing to have. Well, she had a number of interesting findings on rounds. For one thing, when we tested how her eyes would move, they didn't move together. It's a test for the nerves that control the movement of the eye, and it was abnormal because of the meningitis. She had a funny sign that I've never seen before or since. You tap the cheek here on the facial nerve, and the face twitches. And you may have read about it, but you'll never see it. It's got a funny name, Schwasteck sign. It means her blood calcium was low. Don't know why she had that. She had a little white spot on her chest. We thought it was a boil or something like that. As we got close to it, the little white thing had ribs. It was a larva. And she had a fly larva under the skin, which is called myiasis. And at about this time, my 14-year-old daughter, who was with us, was escorted outside and nearly fainted into Jody Skiles' arms from this observation. She had something that I'll have to come back to tell you about. She had sort of an orange stain on her gown, on her hospital gown. And then a few days later, she made a funny sound when she was breathing. And it's called the death rattle. And I wanted to know when I was preparing for this a little bit more about why we use this funny term. It's the sound that you make if you can't clear and cough the stuff that accumulates in your windpipes. So if you get weaker and weaker, sicker, and you're near death, you make this sound. But why do we call it? Where did this rattle term come from? Well, it comes from the man who invented the stethoscope. There was a French physician named Laennec. He worked in a tuberculosis hospital in France around 1800 at a time when about 1 in 6 people in Europe were infected with tuberculosis. It was just absolutely rampant. And he was taking care of these patients. He developed the stethoscope. At that time, it was just a wooden cylinder that he could put on his ear and on the chest of the patient, supposedly because it would respect the modesty of a female patient, because apparently otherwise you put your ear on the chest to listen to what was going on. And since he was the first person to hear what was going on in the chest, he named what he heard. And he had 4 interesting things, and he used a French word, râles. And râles comes from a verb, râler, and râler can be translated a whole bunch of sound words, like crackle, grunt, groan, sigh, wheeze, that sort of thing, but also rattle. So what he was saying when he said someone had râles was that there was a rattling sound. And he knew there was the rattling sound that you could hear from the bedside, the death rattle. And there were other sounds. He called them sonorous and sibilant and crepitant. He had a much better vocabulary than we do nowadays. I think if we discovered a new sign, we would call them awesome râles or something like that. But he didn't. He had those names. But then he was very sensitive about this because he knew that to the family or the patient, if he used this term râles for the other sounds he was hearing with the stethoscope, they would hear him say rattle, and therefore they'd be concerned. They'd think they were going to die, that they had the death rattle and it was the end for them. So he changed the name for sort of public consumption to another funny word that's only known in your physical exam textbooks called ronchus. It's an old Greek word that is sort of like a snoring or wheezing sound. So then there were 200 years of confusion in medicine with people not knowing how to call râles, ronchi, all this. And in 1977, a group of lung doctors got together and abolished them. Now we still use them because they're cool words and so on, but we now call them wheezes and crackles. So that is a bit of a diversion back to a physician 200 years ago, taking care of the same kind of person that I was taking care of, but with a different reason, not HIV, but with the tuberculosis. So to return to our patient, on the day we heard the death rattle, over the next couple of hours while we were rounding, it got quieter and quieter, and she died on the ward. And I don't remember exactly when it was that I figured out the fifth physical finding, which was that orange spot, but I finally did. And the orange spot was there because one of the medicines you give for tuberculosis is called rifampin. And rifampin is a bright orange yellow. And what was happening was she was being given the medicine, but she couldn't swallow it. She couldn't swallow it because the nerves that run her throat, just like the nerves that ran her eyes, weren't working because of the disease. And we didn't pick up on it. And she lost her chance because we didn't deliver the treatment that we thought we were. And you can think of a lot of parallels. There's a lot of treatment we deliver that doesn't actually get there, either because the patient can't afford it, can't pick it up, doesn't trust us, doesn't understand the instructions or whatever. So I think about that. And then I summarize, and I will summarize this more often on teaching rounds. There are maybe three different kinds of bedside signs that we want to pay attention to. The first is the kind of signs that you really need to know if you're a doctor, like do your eyes move, does your throat work? You gotta know how to do this because it's so fast and so efficient, you just have to do this to make diagnoses efficiently. There's a second kind that is fun to do, but it's not essential. It's like knowing what Schwasteck sign is because it's just historically of interest, or what this funny larva in the chest means. But then there are the signs that you get at the bedside that you gotta pay real close attention to. And that's the sort of stuff like the orange spot. When the patient is trying to tell you something, may not have the words for it, but it's essential to what you have to do to help the patient. And I think that's the deepest lesson of bedside teaching. Thank you.